Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
My name's Giuseppe, and I'm an alcoholic. And you are about the best-looking bunch of sick people I've seen in a long time. First of all, I'd like to thank Diane for inviting me up to spend the weekend with you guys. I've had a great time. You guys are so humble and so willing to give, and you guys got a good thing going on up here. Please keep it up. You know, and I'd like to thank Nick for picking me up from the airport and Carlos for spending the day with me and taking me to the aquarium and did some shopping for my little girl and wound up buying two shirts for me. But I guess that's just the way it goes. Anyway, I'm not an authority on Alcoholics Anonymous, alcoholism. All I know is I stopped into a meeting on the way to the graveyard one day. And I've been here ever since. So anything I say up here is strictly my opinion. If it sounds good and you want to take it home and maybe use it, I probably read it in the book or heard it from my sponsor. If it's confusing and it's like, what the hell is he talking about? That's just the real me. Matter of fact, it's really kind of a miracle that I'm here tonight, because when I first got here, I wasn't even an alcoholic. I might have done some recreational drug abuse, but an alcoholic, no way. And after about 2 weeks, I guess the fog started to lift and I started to see a little bit clearer, and I started thinking about what was going on before I got here. Now, I did have 6 drunk drivings, but that was just bad luck. We call them 502s where I come from, so I had a 3012 when I got here. And my last drunk driving was 1985, Halloween night, minding my own business. And I seen those lights in the mirror, and I know this is number 6, so I'm in serious trouble. So as the cop's strolling up to my car, I think I better get a little bit creative. So he knocks on the window, and I roll it down, and he goes, "Where the hell do you think you're going?" I said, "A Halloween party." He goes, "What are you supposed to be?" I said, "A drunk driver." He says, "You're doing great." Matter of fact, I'm not really a cop. I'm going to the same party. Why don't you ride with me? I don't think that's funny. The things we do to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. Came to Alcoholics Anonymous the first time July 20th, 1987. Came to Alcoholics Anonymous wearing a gangster hat and a trench coat, driving a Cadillac that was dying of alcoholism. Nothing wrong with a gangster hat and a trench coat, but it was the middle of July and I wasn't really cold. I happened to watch The Godfather 273 times, and I had a higher power, and his name was Don Corleone. I'm full-blooded Italian. You give a kid a name like Giuseppe, and I was off and running. What I did find out about that gangster hat and trench coat, that was my suit of armor. You know, if I can carry a gun and do the things that I did and had that don't mess with me face on, people just had a tendency to leave you alone. And that's what I was really looking for. So I was never really that tough. I just wanted to keep you out. So I found that out through walking through the journey of Alcoholics Anonymous. Didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I wanted what you guys had. Keep coming back. We love you. You're lying. Yeah? You know, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm just going to tell you how I got here. And I got here through my drug connection. Now, I'm talking about selling drugs, not using them. If you think I use some drugs, I'll leave that up to your imagination.
Now, my friend Mark,
he found this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. And he'd come in and get 30 days, and he'd go back out. And he would get 60 days, and he would go back out. And he would come preach to us about Alcoholics Anonymous in the morning and sell drugs at night, you know. And somewhere in this, and he did this for 15 months, in and out, in and out, in and out. And somewhere in the span of his venture into Alcoholics Anonymous, the cure, he turned Al-Anon on me. And he told me, Giuseppe, you owe me a lot of money. He says, I'm not going to give you your drugs on credit no more unless you do 60 meetings in 60 days. My higher power knows how to get me here, okay? And sure enough, he picked me up, went to this meeting, you know, kind of a funny bunch. You know, half of them were sitting in the front looking real nice, had all their teeth, and all the rest of them are sitting in the back cross-talking and not giving a damn with these little white cards. You know, we call it death row where I come from. And some girl got up and spoke for like 3 hours. Then the baskets came out, so I knew you were a religious cult, you know. And the meeting was over. And then everybody was going here and going there, and I just didn't get it, you know. And but me and Mark took care of business in the parking lot after, because I showed up. But the thing that impressed me the most about Alcoholics Anonymous that night was Mark introduced me to a judge. Says, wow. See, everything I did was illegal before I got here. I never worked legally. Everything I did was, you know, I grew up in the streets and blah, 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 blah. But knowing a judge was pretty, pretty cool. So, the next afternoon, Mark calls me up, says, hey, we're going to a meeting tonight. I go, we just went last night. And so he says, yeah, we're going to go again tonight. So he picked me up, same room, same people, but this time he introduced me to a lawyer. I says, wow, AAA, this is a place, you know? And then one more time after that, Mark disappeared. See, 15 months in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can't try to get sober, you know, and then sell drugs, you know, in the same day. It just doesn't work. Now, the reason, and I'm taking his, it might sound like I'm taking his inventory, because I am. I have no guilt. Mark never changed his rotten, dirty thinking, so he couldn't change his rotten, dirty living. And that's why this didn't work. So Mark disappeared. He was out there one more time, you know, getting ready for this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I get the call. Mark is Giuseppe. And he didn't sound drunk. And he sounded pretty straightforward. So I knew he was in AA again, you know. So I says, uh-oh, here we go. He's back in AA. And he called me from the Orange County Convention. And that's our convention that my home group puts on. And he says, Giuseppe, I can't do it anymore. I says, what's that? He says, I can't live the way I live. And, you know, it asked my higher power to bless me with one day of sobriety at a time. He goes, I have to cut everything loose, including you, you know, unless you want to do this with me. He goes, I'm serious this time. And he said, I'll make you a deal. He says, I don't want you to answer me right now. I'm going to call you back in about 20 minutes. You owe me a lot of money. You know, I will squash that. I will squash all the money that you owe me if you decide to get sober with me. He says, I love you like a brother. You know what? You're going to die out there because you're pretty close. He goes, let's do this thing together. He goes, if not, I want you to come pay me half of what you owe me, and you go your way and I'll go my way. And he hung up the phone. You know what? He could have called me back in 2 seconds. You know what? I was going to tell him, what'd you do? Bump your head? You know what? Hey, keep coming back. We love you. I hear I want to throw an ashtray at somebody's head when I used to hear that stuff. You know, so when he called me back, I told him the deal, you know, and I said, so, you know what? So anyway, our last deal was, and now remember, I'm just talking about selling drugs. I ain't talking about using them. This is part of my story. So I went down to the Orange County Convention, room 204, and we had our last thing, you know. And the last thing he told me was, you know, don't ever call me again unless you decide you want to get sober because, like I told you, I love you like a brother, but I'm not going to die with you. And, you know, he really meant it. And so, long story short, you know, the combination of doing what I was doing with his business and my business, I got to get sick real quick, one day at a time. And, see, my whole life, you know, I grew up in a town called Montebello, which is right next door to East L.A., you know, and so I hung out with the, you know, with the gangbangers and the tough guys. And, you know, in my neighborhood, you know, you have to fight to survive. You have to fight two ways, with your fists and with your tongue. You got to be quick on your feet. You got to be ready for the joke session and who's going to walk away with the resentment. And, you know, I grew up tough in my whole life. You know, I watched all these gangster movies. The only identity that I had back then was, you know what, I was Italian, full-blooded, and people liked that. It was around the when they had that commercial, it's a spicy meatballs, you know? And the Godfather was out, and everybody was trying to be Italian, and, you know, anyway, and that's what I grew up in, you know, but you watch these gangster movies, and the guy starts off just like I was, you know, in the streets making his bones, and you move up as a soldier, you know, and then you get to the big time. But at the end of the movie, he winds up with a bullet in his head and a bowl of spaghetti, right? So, you know, I'm making my bones, and I met these Italian people, whatever that meant, and, you know, I'm trying to be on top. So I think I'm on top now. This is my point. You know, I'm driving a Cadillac. I have so many friends who just love me for who I am, you know. You know, I had the money for the alcohol, and I had the other stuff, and, you know, we're having these great parties. They're just wonderful parties. They start on Friday, and they end around Tuesday. You know, and we're having these really, really deep, meaningful, thoughtful conversations. And they go about like this. Shh. Did you hear that? He's in the tree. Helicopter planes and vans are following me, you know. I'm on top of the world, you know. I'm crawling around on my hands and knees looking out the window because I know that they know, you know. I would have happily gave them a bottle of Jack Daniels and whatever they wanted drug-wise. They just would have been quiet. I kicked open the closet and almost shot my three-piece suit because I thought it was them. Just like the movies, right? You know, and I didn't know that I was getting ready for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was just getting ready, you know? Just getting ready. And long story short, just to wrap this up, I got pulled over for absolutely no reason at all. Well, I was driving a Cadillac that was dying of alcoholism and drug abuse. And I was wearing a gangster hat, and I hadn't slept for about 4 days. And I'm sitting next to a guy wearing a cowboy hat. And I got pretty sloppy in my business. And I think I was taking him to his Aunt Ethel's house so he can cash a check so he could pay me. Top-notch gangster here, right? And he starts doing the two-step in the front seat. And because the cop pulled us over, and I said, what are you doing? He goes, I brought some with me. I know I wasn't supposed to. I said, I'll kill you. I'll kill you. You know, and the cops come up, and they start talking to him, and they take him out of the car, and they talk to him, and they come and take me out of my car and put me in their car. And I'm sitting in the back seat, and sure enough, they went up to my car, and they found what I had. And, you know, and I was going to jail. And the last thing, I'll never forget it, the cop said, excuse me, do you want your friend to drive your car home or do you want us to impound it? I go, was he getting to go home? So now I'm in jail. I'm in jail where I do my best thinking. And I think about Mark. Mark's in that AAA and he knows a judge and a lawyer. You know, I got bailed out because I knew people, but I had some heavy charges on me, you know, besides fake license and, I mean, all kinds of stuff. You know, matter of fact, I got a resentment. You know, one of my charges was reckless driving and evading arrest. I was on my motorcycle because that's how I used to take care of business. And I got a ticket for doing 135 miles an hour, reckless driving, and I didn't even get on TV. Now in L.A., as soon as it happens, it's 3 hours chasing the guy. Anyway, I just thought I'd clear that up. I kind of resent it. So anyway, so I'm in jail, and I'm thinking about Mark knows these people on this AAA. And so I call Mark, and I go, Mark, it's Giuseppe. He goes, what? And I says, you know what, Mark? I really thought about it, and I really want to get sober. And he goes, I can't believe it. I says, why? He says, well, after the meeting, we play for the alcoholic who's still suffering. And I've been playing for you for the last 2 weeks. So I go, I'm suffering. So, you know, like I said, I know it. Keep coming back. Live. You know, I just came here because I don't want to go to jail. I had 3 months before I had to show up for jail, I mean for court. And, as a matter of fact, I guess I needed AA and NA and CA so I could stay in L.A. and not have to worry about the DA. And that Mark happened to get my best friend and my best customer sober in this time. It was only 3 months since that convention and kiss and Mark goodbye, and I'm going to be rich and famous to you know, beat up and at the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous like a whipped pup, you know. And he told me, oh, you got to get a sponsor. So, you know, he says, that's my sponsor right there. And I told him everything about you. He'd be really good. Why don't you ask him, you know. So I kind of looked at him. I figured, looks like he could spell, you know. So I went up to him after the meeting, and I real official like, excuse me, sir, would you please consider being my Alcoholics Anonymous sponsor? And he looked at me, are you going, really? He goes, are you willing to go to any length? Oh, yes, sir. He goes, what do you do for a living? He knew what I did. He goes, what do you do for a living? I sell drugs. What do you do? You got to be a smart ass because you're scared, but you can't let him know, right? This is all tough guys are sissy girls. They just got to act tough, okay? And so he goes, I go, I sell drugs. What do you do? And you ever piss off an old timer? His big eyes got real small, and he looked at me and he says, is that what you're going to do for a living? Well, it's the only job I have right now, sir. And he said, listen, you son of a bitch, didn't you learn anything from Mark? I go, I'm not Mark. He goes, listen. He goes, you get the hell out of here. He says, and if you live, we'll be right here. And a moment of clarity, you know, it's just like I wanted to say, well, can you just write this letter and I'd be happy to leave and never bother you again. See, because I was going to have him write me a letter for the judge saying, hey, Giuseppe is alcoholic of the month. Please don't put him in jail. We need him. Seriously, that's what I was going to do. I wanted a letter. And something happened outside that meeting. I had no money. I had nothing. I had no friends. You know what? And, you know, something happened out there. And, I didn't know what it was then, but it was the beginning of my spiritual awakening because I was really asleep. And I had a deal the next day, and I called it off, and I says, you know what? And that was actually July 20th, 1987. And I drove away from that meeting saying, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I can't stay sober. I can't. These guys ain't sober anyway. They're lying, you know. Just back and forth, you know. And I went and I talked to my last spiritual advisor on the earth. And that was this cocktail waitress at Sugar's I was going out with. And she made sense. You know what? She says, dude, you're going to go to jail for a long time. Look at your record. You got discharged and this one, and they're going to find out about that one. She goes, you better give this AA thing a try, and hopefully they write you a nice letter. And I had 2 beers that night and went home, and I showed up on July 21st, 1987, and I've been here ever since. You know, and I don't know when God picked me, and I don't know when he picked you, but you know what? He gave us a second chance at life. You know what? You know, and I loved hearing Mike share and Bo and Shirley, and you know what? And it's been like the theme is like, it's like family, you know what? What alcohol does, And the other part of it is when tragedy hits, we can walk through anything hand in hand in Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter what. You know, and believe me, I can sit up here and make you guys laugh for an hour, you know, and if I was to do that this weekend, you know, it'd be a shame. So, you know what? I've been talking to my higher power all day, and you know, my message is going to be about what not to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, and how you can walk through anything. So, you know, Saturday night speaker is supposed to be the one with all the fun, but you know what? I didn't fly all the way up here to help, to get you guys to like me. You know what? I flow up here because somebody in this room I know needs to hear what I'm going to say tonight. So like I was saying before that, you know, God gave me a second chance at life. He brought me to the door and He picked me. We're the chosen ones. We've been picked. You know, I can't tell you how many friends I have that wrap their car around a telephone pole never going to get to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I know a friend that I got sober with, you know, in this first year of sobriety, and then he decided to go back out there after 9 months. Wasn't working his program, so he was too guilty to take a 9-month chip, so he went up there and washed down the pain. You know, and while he was out there for a month, got a hold of a dirty needle and got the AIDS virus. Came back to AA not knowing, had 6 months of sobriety before he found out, then he blew his brains out in the garage in front of his girlfriend. He ain't never get to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous again. He ain't never going to have his family restored. You know what? So all I could tell you, that's a serious disease, and I don't know why we're chosen, but we're chosen for a second chance at life. And all my God did was bring me to that back door right there and say, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. And all the stuff that happened to you as a kid, whether it's molestation or abuse or not having a father or whatever, God heard all that and God was watching it. I just wasn't ready to listen to it. You know, and he let me do my thing out there till I was good enough and ready to bring me here to the last house on the block. And he said, here's my chosen kids. I'm going to give you a second chance at life if you want it. And I don't know about you, but in my area, we're losing a lot of people and we're losing a lot of old timers. You know what? For whatever reason. You know what? And he just, you know what? And where I come from, you know, we usually say the opening prayer, and it's not an AA prayer, but you know, for some reason it's stuck in Southern California. And a part of that prayer, it goes like this. It says, God, we believe that you're here with us now and that you want to be a real partner with us in this business of living. Now, I don't know about you, a partnership's a 50-50 thing. So the minute that I start wanting to do 49%, my God won't do the 51. He says, see you. See you later. Help those people out in Iraq. They need some help. You know what? But the minute that I do my 50, which is really my 100% of my half, you know, God rewards me. You know, I don't want to read the book. I don't want to work the steps. You know, I want to drive through McDonald's and there's two cars ahead of me. I'm pissed off, right? I want to put it in a microwave oven and if it ain't done in 3 minutes, you know, I don't want it. You know, fast. We're in a fast, let's get it done. I ain't got time world, you know. Who wants to read the book? Doesn't even have any pictures, you know. Come on. Ain't enjoyable reading. But, you know, when I do my half, God does his half, and I'm okay. You know, and my theme tonight is God, my higher power, because without him, I'm nothing. You know, and let me tell you a little bit about, you know, the beginning of my journey through Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I said, didn't come here because I wanted what you had, just was coming here to get out of jail. You know, and just to wrap that part of it up, God dropped all those charges, all of them. You know, I should have been in jail for everything I had with priors, you know, 3 to 7 years. But God dropped those charges. So I'm going to this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, and Mark and Guy, my two buddies, are picking me up every night and taking me. And don't know if I'm going to stay yet, but we're going to the same meeting, same place, same people, same room. You know, first night's participation, and so on and so forth. And I'm going to this meeting, and then all of a sudden I got sober on July 21st, and we celebrate birthdays at the end of the month. So, you know, I got like 4 days sober now, and all of a sudden they throw birthday night at me. Birthday night? What's that? Whose birthday is it? You know? No. If you get 365 days, one day at a time, back to back, we give you a cake. 365 days? You know, I already want to be a speaker, and, you know, I figure So anyway, so this guy gets up and he takes a 1 year cake, and I take a look at him and say, maybe, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. And then this guy gets up, takes a cake for 20 years. And I was pissed. Sober 20 years. You're a liar. And I sitting there with 4 days thinking I should be the next speaker, and why ain't they calling on me? So I got this guy after the meeting in the parking lot, and I got right in his face like I was going to kiss him, and I said, excuse me, sir, do you mean to tell me and the group that you've been sober for 20 years? He says, yeah, that's right. I said, 20 New Year's Eves. He says, yeah, that's right. And I said, well, you know what? I don't bleeping believe you. And he got right in my face and he says, isn't that great? Keep coming back, it works. And he walked away. And he left me with me. And my mind was like a bad neighborhood back then. You never want to go there alone. And I was alone. And hell, he played me just right. Because the reality of that whole scenario was, you can stay sober 20 years if you work this program. I can't stay sober 20 years. I'm going to go piss this guy off so we can get into a fight so I can justify leaving. And he just walked away. So that's it. I'm driving home. I says, that's it. I quit. No more Alcoholics Anonymous. Can't do it. I can't stay sober for 20 years. No way. I'll go to jail. Been there before. Don't care. But that's it. So now the phone rings. You know, it's the next day. It's Mark. Hey, we're going to a special meeting tonight.
Oh, a special meeting. What kind of special meeting?
Well, it's a Thursday night men's stag up in Covina, and before we go to the meeting, we all go have dinner. I says, well, look, I really don't feel good, Mark. You know, I promise I'll go with you tomorrow. And he goes, okay, I understand. Click. Whoa, that was easy. Yeah, about an hour later, I open the door. Who is it? Mark. Get in the car. You know, and my sponsor at the time, you know, he sponsored like about 15 guys. We had this van going up to Covina, called the Wet Brain Express, right? Going up to the Thursday night men's stag to get spiritual and have a little grub. And the whole 45-minute drive, and, oh, you got to read chapter 5 before you leave. And it's like, you know, and I'm just melting. I said, you know what, I will not be there tomorrow. You can call me, you can look for me, you know. I didn't have cell phones back then, so didn't have to worry about it. And I'm just melting. Let me pull up to this restaurant. There's about 75 alcoholics in this restaurant. You know, and I'm sitting at the spiritual table. And they're all talking about this gibberish. And I'm wearing my gangster hat because, you know what? Because I'm scared. You know, that gangster hat, it was like, I could describe that gangster hat. I wore it for 30 days in the program because I was like Frosty the Snowman. When I put it on, I was solid. Don't mess with me. I took it off. It was like water. So I'm sitting at this table, and this guy reaches over to grab the bread, and he drops a glass of water in my lap. Oh, that's a spiritual awakening, kid. And I'm saying, you know, this glass across your head is going to wake you up. And I'm melting. I am melting because you can't con these people. You can't con a group of old-timers. So there was this one gentleman sitting next to me, and he was kind of quiet and looking kind of like a human quaalude, you know, minding his own business. Oh, I'm sorry. So I figured I'd strike up a conversation with him. So I said, excuse me, sir, how long you been sober?
34 years.
Will you be my higher power? And that's it. And see, let me tell you something. God is never late. I'm just never on time. Mark was not supposed to try to talk me into going to the meeting. He was supposed to come pick me up so I could be at this restaurant sitting next to this old guy with 34 years of sobriety. And he looks at me and he goes, how long you been sober, kid? I go, 4.5 days. Thank you very much. And he says, what time did you get up this morning? I said, 8 o'clock. He goes, I got up at 10 o'clock. I go, oh, okay. And he goes, you have more sobriety than me today. I says, what are you talking about? He says, you have more sobriety than me today. And I says, yeah, newcomer, and pick up that check. No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, this program, and you know, it was a God moment. I was supposed to be there. He knew exactly what to tell me, and I've never seen him since. He says, if you got up at 8 o'clock and I got up at 10 o'clock, that means while I was sleeping, you had 2 more hours while you were awake that you could have decided to take a drink or did some drugs. You decided not to do that. You're still sober, right? He goes, yeah. He goes, this program works 24 hours at a time. He goes, can you stay sober for 24 hours? I says, yeah, 24 hours? He goes, just 24 hours. I go, yeah. He goes, apparently you got 4.5 days. He says, I have 34 years of recovery, one day at a time, back to back. He says, but I got to get up and live this program just like you. He says, as a matter of fact, he goes, you see my arm? He says, my arm's 34 inches long too. And he goes, that's how far away my next drink is if I decide not to work this program. And he put it to his lips and he drank it. And he also said, sobriety's like riding a bike, kid. He says, if you stop pedaling, I don't care how much time you have, you're going to lose your balance. If you stop pedaling too long, you're going to fall on your ass. And that means getting drunk. Can you stay sober for 24 hours? I says, yeah. He says, well, let me tell you something. The person in this room that has the most sobriety today, and he looked at the restaurant, he goes, is the one who got up first because he's had to stay sober the longest. Not big difference between sobriety, which is 24 hours, according to my sponsor, and recovery. Recovery, a whole different thing. He made it easy for me, so I decided to stick around a little while longer. And you know, I'm going to meetings, and I got sober with they call them the Mucky Mucks in Orange County. They put on the convention and the big speakers, this and that, and starting to get a little bit of comfortable, had my charges dropped, and going to these wonderful, wonderful speaker meetings, top-notch speakers, probably heard some of them. So I buy the tape, go home, listen to the tape, change a few things around, go to the meeting on the other side of town. Oh, I know you guys don't do that up here. Share it. People, God, I'd love to hear you share. Oh, here's my card. Call me. I'm doing the social thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. Read the book. Why? I ain't going to jail. I'm learning how to share. People like me. Read the book. Work the steps. They ain't going to do no work. You know, I want to do the social things. Social, 7 meetings a week. A poker on Friday night. Sober dance on Saturday night. This is, you know what? And this is how I'm doing my program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I kind of felt like, you know, it says you got to trudge the road. Well, these old timers are trudging the road and, you know, I'm just stepping on top of their coattail. You know, and I feel like I'm in the Rose Parade. They're trudging and I'm like, you know, you get a job, you clean up, you look a little bit better, you know. And I ain't doing no work in Alcoholics Anonymous. I ain't doing nothing except this social thing. You know, and I get 6 months, and I get 9 months, and all of a sudden it happens. I get that big year. Well, let me tell you something about my 30-day chip. See, my best chip ever was my 30-day chip. 30 days without a drink. 30 days. You know what? And they called it, anybody got 30 days? And I walked up, and you know, I took my chip, and this idiot takes his wallet out, gives his buddy $20. Right in front of the whole group. And you know what I said? Hey, asshole, double or nothing for 60. And the other thing was, You know, they give me this 30-day chip, and I'm looking at it, and it's like, it's gold, and it's got a couple of rubies in it and stuff, and you guys don't get them up here? Okay, not really, but that's what it felt like, because I was sober 30 days. 30 days, and I get in my Cadillac, and I'm driving home, and there's nobody on the freeway except me, God, and this gangster hat, because I'm still wearing my gangster hat. And I look at this chip, and I look in the mirror, and I see this fool under the gangster hat, and I just threw it out the window, you know? And all I could say is, if anybody found that hat, I'd love to sponsor you. I never saw it land either. It's like God said, it's filthy anyway, you know? So, you know, so going back to where I left off, so I get this year, you know, and all of a sudden I meet her. She's so wonderful. Only problem is, her's married. Oh, an unhappy relationship, I must tell you. She was planning on leaving him, but she had to deal with the kids. So, she worked me for about 6 months, and I had a slip. And I fell in love with her. She was the prettiest girl in my home group, and I don't know if I can say it or not. Going to write a book, 101 parking lots after a meeting. And I don't think that's funny. We got caught. And when the group, and we're a tight group, you know, we're, you know, and it was like an E.F. Hutton when I walked in the meeting. You know what? She couldn't get out because, yeah, I'm justifying it. I already wrote about it. Forget about it. I was wrong. But when we got caught, you know, it was opportunity for him to leave him. You know, we were so in love. You know, and my sponsor found out about it. Called me up. Is it true? Yes. Get your down here. Threw me in the fifth step room. Told me I don't care how much you love her. I don't care if you think she's the right. You got to let her go for at least a year. And if God wants you to stay together after that, then it's okay. She needs a year to get over this relationship. And I wasn't too happy with that advice. So you know what I did? I fired him. Went up to Cofina, got me a brand new unused sponsor. Waited about 2 weeks to tell him the deal. He wouldn't co-sign it either. So you know what I did? I fired him too. So now I'm sponsoring me and her. And we're having this wonderful, loving, caring, Alcoholics Anonymous relationship. You know the kind I'm talking about. We're arguing on the freeway. She ain't listening. I pull over and drop her off. Go about a half a mile and say, I'm not going to tell her never to ever call me again. You know, and so I'm backing up on the freeway. And don't ever call me. Your stuff will be on the porch. Loving, caring, Alcoholics Anonymous relationship. It didn't last too long. I was as sick as it was. 4 years. And then you know what happened? She got a sponsor. And she called me up and said, I can no longer date you no more. My sponsor wants me to break up with you until I work my steps. What? See, in the meantime, I think I'm somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm stealing everybody else's pitches and I'm speaking and I'm sponsoring 19 guys because it makes me look good, don't you know? I think I worked my first 4-step on a matchbook cover. But I'm taking you through the journey of sobriety, son. You could do it. You know? So she left me with me. See, when I had to do an inventory on relationships, six months or longer, all of them had the same pattern. Damsels in distress. This way, I can go in there, save them, tell me how smart I am, that I don't have to take a look at me. See, I like looking in the magnifying glass at them instead of the mirror at me. So, and I usually pick these girls that are about 5'10", wearing a dress for somebody who's 4'10". Because it gets me attention, don't you know? So I got a broken picker. I pick the sick ones every time. I heard a speaker say you can line the 10 most beautiful girls in Alcoholics Anonymous up against the wall. I'll pick the sick one every time. I could relate to that. So now it's not good for my reputation. She left. And I haven't caught another one yet. And I'm getting sick real quick, one day at a time in recovery, if you want to call that. I was on a dry drunk for 4.5 years. I was so dry that people hung a sign on me, said, "No smoking around Giuseppe." Gonna go up like a Christmas tree. Poof. So you know what I did? I gotta catch me another higher power. My sponsor says the thing that predominates my life the most, person, place, or thing, automatically becomes my higher power because I put all my time and energy to keep it there. So you know, bought some new clothes, did all this stuff and everything. Went to the Charlie and Joe Big Book study so I could learn how to share better. You know what? I'm going to catch me another one. And it ain't working. It ain't working. Nobody's biting. You know? See, so the first thing that happens to an alcoholic like me that's out of control, ain't worked the steps or the program, just going to meetings, just volunteering because it makes me look good. You know, the first thing I get is podiumitis. Podiumitis is an alcoholic who's dry like me and working this program that's got a chair in every meeting for about 20 minutes to convince you that he's okay. And you usually know you got it when they grab it right here and right here. You know, please put on your seatbelts. I'll be up here sharing for a while. Steering committee, I'm driving. Control issues. You know, I'm so out of control that I'm trying to take control of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't want to read the book. Ain't got no pictures. So I'm out of control, and finally I turn into this sick, ugly bastard called Sponsor Man. Sponsor Man flies around the room fixing everything and everybody. Excuse me, you need to read page 62. Who the hell are you? Who am I? I'm Sponsor Man. I read that book so you don't have to. More spiritual than a bottle of tequila. More powerful than six hits of acid. That's right, it's me, Sponsor Man. And I get my newest newcomer, because I sponsor 100 guys by now. My newest newcomer is Tradition Boy. That's right, Sponsor Man. Principles before personalities. And I'm flying around the room trying to find righteous women so we can have a team and rescue Alcoholics Anonymous. Out of control. Excuse me. I've heard you share for the last 3 months about your 4-step list, and I had some time last night. Here, I wrote it for you. I have some time right now. You could read it back to me. And tell everybody how much I helped you. Who the hell are you? Who am I? You know who I am. I'm Sponsor Man. I think I'm the new Bill Wilson, and really I found out I was Dr. Bob's nightmare. And you know what? I'm about ready to drink. I'm about ready to drink because I can't kill that pain. Let me tell you something. I don't have a problem with alcohol. I only have a problem with alcohol if I drink it. You know, I come into Alcoholics Anonymous 4.5 years, dry drunk, doing the social events, not working no programs, not working no steps, speaking at meetings, sponsoring people. Hey, I don't want to tell you this stuff. I want you guys to like me. I have low self-esteem. But somebody needs to hear it. My program was in neutral. And I'm a liar and I'm a manipulator. And you know, I'm about ready to drink because, you know, that's how I kill that pain. I kill that pain like that. You know what? It's okay to borrow $20 from the treasury. I'm secretary because I gotta take care of some business. It's okay to lie to her. It's okay to, by the time it gets up here,
I got a drink to wash it down. Because I haven't cleared it out from the beginning. And you know what the sickest part about sponsor man? Excuse me, honey, how long you been sober? 2 days. Who are you?
I'm your higher power.
That wasn't funny. I wasn't going to share that. Anyway, my point is this, is I did Alcoholics Anonymous. I did the meetings. I didn't work the program. I didn't work the steps. I heard a gentleman share about the circle of Alcoholics Anonymous. You have the circle, that's us as a whole. Inside that circle is a triangle. That triangle supports that circle. That triangle has the 3 points of our program. Unity, service, and recovery. And I was real good at the unity. I'm going to tell you something. Let me finish it up. I was doing the unity part of it. I wasn't really doing the service part of it. And I definitely wasn't doing the recovery part of it. And, you know, if I don't bounce off all 3 sides of this program, especially the recovery part, the triangle fold and the circle is squash and I'm out there drunk. You know, I didn't bother to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now I'm going to say something. This is my own opinion. My opinion. There is absolutely no recovery for me in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you why. I hear you share your experience, your strength. I walk out with some hope that if I pick up this book and work these steps, I could recover too. I can get inspiration from your sharing. I can get some strength, but I ain't gonna get the recovery unless I do the work. It's kind of like saying, let's start a program called Drunks Anonymous. You know what? And we all met at Lucky John's every Saturday night. And instead of having the steps and nutritionists on the board, they have all the alcohol. You know what? And we talk about getting this program is. You're going to get drunk. Got to work the steps to get drunk here. You know what? I could talk about step 4, step 5, step 6. I ain't going to get drunk unless I do what? Take the steps. Same thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. I come in here and we're losing so many people because they think AA is going to 7 meetings a week. They think AA is making coffee. Well, it is. As long as I bounce off the other 2 sides. You know what? The program of Alcoholics Anonymous is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, I'm about ready to drink because I can't take it no more. And I start praying for a sponsor, praying for a sponsor, praying for a sponsor. And this gentleman, my ex-higher power, the one I was talking about, she called me. She had a slip. She had a slip and she called me and I told her, I'm about ready to go drink. I can't take this anymore. She goes, let me have somebody call you. And she had this gentleman call me that I never met before, never heard anything about. And we talked for about 45 minutes. And you know what he said after 45 minutes? Buddy, you're sick. I says, yeah, I am. And I'm beat up. And he says, come down to my house. And I knocked on the door and he opened the door with a big smile. And he gave me a big hug. He said, have a seat. And he made a pot of coffee in about 4 hours of just vomiting all that stuff that I'd never dealt with. 4.5 years worth of stuff, plus the wreckage of my past, you know. And a couple hours later, his wife came home from working, you know, an 8-hour job and alcoholic down. And she pulled up a chair and more coffee. And that night I got a sponsor and I call him Mom and Pop. You know, and it's like tag team sponsorship. You know, after he gets done kicking my ass, it's her turn. Ooh, 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 ooh. You know. And with 4.5 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I became a newcomer, just didn't have a drink. These are my rules. Couldn't date for the first year. Had to call every night at 6:30, no matter what, no matter when. If the answer machine was on, talk to the answer machine. Hi, this is Giuseppe. I'm okay, having a good day. See you at the meeting. I had to go to these meetings they told me to, no other ones. I had to be there with the beginning of my 4-step. You know, and I had to meet with them to do my writing assignments every Tuesday night. Let me tell you something. This is the problem, and I'm sure somebody else has this problem. I couldn't do a 4-step. I couldn't do a 4-step. I couldn't look at the stuff that I did. Some of that stuff I could never make amends for. I wanted to sweep it under the rug and not deal with it. How many people in this room, first of all, how many people here are sponsoring yourselves? Raise your hands. You see that right there? That's called recovery, because the man had enough humility to raise his hand and said, I'm sponsoring myself. That's called recovery right there. Now get a damn sponsor before it's too late. God, I took a trip to Albuquerque. I lost my thought. What was he mean? Oh, four step. How many people here think the four step is the hardest step to work? Raise your hand. Wrong. You know what the hardest step to work here is? Step three. Steps one, two, and three allow me, specifically designed to help me find a power greater than myself. Once I take all three of those steps in their wholeness and turn my will, my life over to the care of God, then guess what? I don't have to walk through my fourth step alone, do I? If you're having trouble with any step after step three, it's because you have to go back to step three. That's the key right there. So this is how I did my fourth step. Got a chair for me, got a chair for God. Put it up against the wall. Put God's chair right there. I got on my knees and I said, Dear God, I invite you into my heart, my soul, and my mind. I invite you into this pen, my heart, and especially this chair. This is scary, but I'm about ready to go drink. Please, I want to say the third step prayer, and I need you to walk me through this fourth step. If I'm working step three and believe I'm working it, then I know that God's there, right? So I don't got to walk through that step alone. So now I become the doctor and the patient. I got to open myself up, put it on paper, get the cancer out so I could take it to my sponsor, who's just a telephone to God, so I can give it to him and let him handle it, because he's going to be up all night anyway. So here it comes. Here comes the tough stuff. I don't want to take a look at this. I don't want to take a look at this. I put the pen down. What happens? I bump into God. God says, go sit down. We're going to get through this. You call to me and I'm here. Guess what? I finished my fourth step. Guess what? I call Pop. I says, Pop, I finished it. He says, good. Come on down. Let's get rid of it. Steps one, two, and three allow me to find a power greater than myself. Steps four, five, six, and seven allow me to get right with me, to find out who I've been drinking with. I didn't drink because I was thirsty. I drank because I was killing the pain, and most of all, I just wanted to shut the noise off. I wanted to shut the noise off. But really, that noise was 3 inches behind my belly button where that pain was. I just got done operating on myself, and I put it on paper so I could hold it in my hand. So 4, 5, 6, and 7 allow me to get right with me. Steps 7 and 8 allow me to get right with you, and through the grace of God, I can work 10, 11, and 12 so I can give back what's been so freely given to me. I found out in that fourth step exactly when I became an alcoholic, to the day. I can't promise it to anybody in this room, but this is what happened to me. What happened was, I have a learning disability and dyslexia, and I didn't know how to read and write when I got here. You know, they sent me, because I had so many court cases when I first got here, they sent me to school, and I took this test. And, you know, they told this teacher that I seen something on TV about dyslexia, and she goes, yeah, you got it. And they sent me to a special class to learn how to read. And I graduated from college with a 4.0 grade average. I only took one class, but I got an A. No, report card says 4.0 because God dismissed my charges and I had to go get a job to support myself. But, you know, I learned how to read is the point. And I'm doing this four step and it's coming back. It's coming back. It's coming back. I buried some of that stuff down there so far down so hopefully it would never see the light of day. Is that what the big book says? And it's coming. It's coming. And what happened was this was, when I went to kindergarten, it was great. New toys, new games, new friends. All of a sudden, they throw first grade at me. What does that entail? The beginning of reading, writing, arithmetic. They don't know I'm dyslexic. They don't know I have a learning disability. I'm a problem child, right? I'm in the slow reading class, and I'm so cross-eyed back then. When I cried, tears would roll down my back. And they're making fun of me. I'm the stupid, cross-eyed, short, fat, stupid kid that, you know, can't play with dodgeball with them because they're the smart kids. You know what? I forgot about this until I did this search and inventory. I told my mom, I go, I'm not going to school no more. She goes, how come? And I go, because they make fun of me and I can't do it. She says, ask the teacher for help. That's what she's there for. Wait. Let me get this right. If I ask a teacher for help and she helps me, I could be a part of, I could be like them, I won't be stupid. That's not what we talked about, but that was the hope walking to school that day. So teacher gives us an assignment and, you know, do this. She walks away. I got dyslexia. I got a learning disability. I don't get it. I want to be a part of. Ask the teacher for help. I raise my hand. She comes over. Do this. Don't get it. Comes back. Do this. After four or five times, she thinks I'm being a smartass. She runs over to my desk and she yanks that book out of my hand, hits me on the head and says, get the hell out of my classroom. Here's a 5-year-old outside that classroom looking in, everybody laughing at me. Guess what? I became an alcoholic that day outside that classroom. Because if I would have known at 5 years old, if I would have went down to the liquor store and got me a half pint and drank that, I'd have enough courage to walk right back into that room, grab that teacher, pull her wig off, and kick her ass. I would have done it. Alcohol fixes that pain for me. Sex fixes that pain for me. Gambling fixes that pain for me. Drugs fixes that pain for me. Because, like I said before, if all I had to do was quit drinking, I wouldn't have any more problems, right? Well, they gave me some steps to get all that stuff out to see why and to see where my character defects come from. You know, I got to plug my umbilical cord into something. If it ain't alcohol, it's drugs. If it ain't drugs, it's women. If it's not women, it's money. You know, whatever it is. So I'm a 5-year-old outside that classroom making adult decisions. Guess what? These are my character defects. I will never, ever let somebody laugh at me again. Well, if I'm Italian and put on a gangster hat, stick a gun up your ass, you ain't going to mess with me. I will never, ever ask for help again. Don't help me, I'll do it myself. I'm also getting the reverse side of it. I'm outside that door having everybody laugh at me. You know what? I have low self-esteem and low self-worth. I'm useless. I'm a 5-year-old making adult decisions. I clicked off that day. I graduated from high school, but I promised myself I would never, ever learn again. I couldn't even spell high school when I graduated. So now I found out where my character defects come from and why I'm an alcoholic. Working a simple program called AA. Ever hear of it? And I found out a lot about me. You know what I'm going to... No, I can't tell you. Okay, you know what I found out in that 4-step? My whole life, my dad was this good-looking, rugged Italian that would walk down the street and he was so intimidating, flowers would turn the other way. And I kind of look like him, and I have his temper and everything, so I thought I was like my dad. I found out in that 4-step I'm more like my mom. Codependent. You know, what do you call those bugs that you go like that and they roll up? Potato bugs? That's what we call them. That's like, you know, the most important thing I found out in that 4-step is that I'm just happy to be one of the girls today. I started at a meeting, and this guy asked me out. That's not what I mean. I'm soft and sensitive, and you know what? I think tough guys suck, and if you don't believe me, meet me out back. Let's get serious here. You know what? I have Bobby Sherman records, and listen to them. I thought that Keith Partridge was cool when I was a kid, and if the Partridge Family's on, I'm going to watch it. I cried watching Forrest Gump. And I'm about to cry right now. Because I'll tell you what, all my life trying to be tough, I found out that I don't want to be any of that stuff. I almost died trying to be somebody. I'm just so happy that you guys let me be someone. I don't want to be too big and I don't want to be too small. I just want to be medium. And you know what? The other thing is, is that I don't, you know, I believe in the big book too. So if God took a rib from Adam to make Eve, that means us men had sensitivity, vulnerability. We just happened to watch too many John Wayne Rambo movies. So we can't share emotions, or, you know, we're feminine. Well, I say, all you tough guys, go to hell. God gave me a second chance at life to be who I was supposed to be. See, you know what I found out also in that fourth step? That nobody in this room is better than me. But you know what else? I'm not better than anybody in this room. Because we're all God's kids. And you get all God's kids and you put them in a straight line. There ain't one better than the other one. Some might have more money or more stuff, but you know what? I'll tell you what, if you took a room like this and put this many people in it, and nobody knew what anybody looked like, and you left the lights off, and you had to communicate for at least a month through the language of the heart, you'd be surprised who your best friend is when the light goes on. You know? Might not be the prettiest or the wealthiest or the smartest, but it's going to be somebody who has this. See, the longest journey that you can take in Alcoholics Anonymous, the longest journey, 18 inches, from here to here. There's a difference in my life right there. I got to go back there and find out my insecurities, find out where the hurt came from, found out why I picked damsels in distress, find out why I got to be a tough guy, all in a 6-month process by working these steps called Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I promised I was going to talk about family. Let me tell you something. I hated my dad growing up. My mom went to Italy on a vacation. She met my dad, married him, came back, had me. Long story short. You know, and I'm watching these programs, and he's full-blooded Italian. He doesn't know what baseball is. He doesn't know what peace, love, and any of that stuff is. You know, he just gets up and goes to work. Don't know how to show feelings. Don't know how to show emotions. Never told me he loved me. You know what? Never played baseball. Put together my kite. All 20 of us went to the field to fly it. My kite was backwards. Maybe he was dyslexic too, I don't know. But, you know, that stuff scarred me. And I thought I hated my dad. And I was pissed off at my mom for marrying him. And I punished her, and I took it out of her, and I took it out of my brother. I'll tell you a couple of stories, and I'm going to wrap this up. I had a sister that was 15 years old, and 1 week she got hit by a car. And she didn't make it. And all she wanted to do was hang out with her big brother. Because I was a big shot, and I figured when she gets a little bit older, when she gets a little bit older, and you know, she never got a chance to get a little bit older. And that was one of my unresolved issues, because in 1983 I locked myself in my bedroom, and I used drugs, and I drank, and I never felt that pain. Now Pop had to do an inventory on everybody in my family so I can get right with them. It says in the big book, sometimes we know it, we shove some of that stuff down so hopefully we'd never see the light of day. So now I'm doing this inventory about my sister. I write 2 pages. No feelings, no attachments. I call. Mom answers the phone. I says, Mom, I'm writing about my sister. She, you know the story. I ain't feeling nothing. I feel like an animal. She goes, it's okay. I want you to tear that up and start like this. Dear God, I'm pissed off at you for taking my sister before her time. I said, I'm not going to write that. She goes, just do it, I'm telling you. Sure enough, dear God, I am pissed off at you. And about 2 sentences into it, damn broke. Because I wasn't really pissed off at God, but I had the permission to let that damn open up. And there I am back in 1983, feeling that pain. You know what? And I'm a wreck. I'm a mess because all those emotions are coming out. And I go down, Pop puts me in the 5th step room, and we get right with it. And he says, look, this is how I want you to finish getting right with this. He goes, I want you to write her a letter, take it to the cemetery with some flowers, and read it to her. Tell her that you are an alcoholic, you had a disease, you've been talking to her just like you would be talking to her in person. And I says, Pop, I'll do that, but I ain't writing a goodbye letter. All right, I hope I see you later letter. He goes, fine. So I wrote this letter, and I went to the cemetery, and I read her and told her that I was sick and I was sorry, just like if I was talking to her, like making amends. And when I was done, I rolled it up and I put it with the flowers, and I walked away 99% free. But I still had some doubt. Did God make sure she heard that? Was she there? you know, human doubt. So that night I'm at a meeting. Go ahead and test God. I'm at a meeting and this girl shares, she just came back from being out there and, you know, she was loaded, but her dad was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and now she promised she's going to stay sober, but he knows he died and he's never going to see it. So this guy shares to her, but it's really for me. And he shares this. He says, there's this kid in the football team. Had no business being on the football team. Third string. Wasn't good. But he had a lot of heart and spirit and everybody loved him. So the week of the homecoming game, biggest game of the year, his dad died. He got dismissed from school and practice to attend with the funeral and everything. Comes back the day of the game. As soon as the whistle blows, coach, gotta put me in. Guy hasn't played all season. It's homecoming. Just relax. So, coach, you got to put me in. He kept on hounding the coach. At halftime, they're losing 42-0. So, coach says, go ahead, go in. Let him in. This kid, first play, tackles the quarterback, grabs the ball, runs for a touchdown. He did this. He won the game single-handedly. And the coach couldn't believe it. He gets him in the locker room after the game, and he goes, son, you're fantastic. Why haven't you always played like that? He says, well, coach, my dad's watching. He says, what do you mean your dad's watching? I thought your dad died. He goes, he did, but he was born blind. I know God gave him his eyes so he could see. Do you want it? It's there. I did what I was supposed to do. I doubted God, and he still answered me and said, she heard you, and she's fine. And you stay sober. When they pat your face with a shovel, you can come see her. My dad. I know I'm almost out of time, but my mom and dad... You know, you talk about walking through anything in sobriety. Well, first of all, I'm going to tell you this. There was a gentleman who told me, the same guy that had the 20 years when I got in his face, the next week he says, call me sport. Hey, sport. He says, tough guys like you don't make it around here. I says, what are you talking about, old man? He goes, look it. If you can name me one problem that you could solve that will go away, that you'll never have to deal with again by drinking or using drugs, I'll go out and drink with you. And I thought, because I wanted to drink with that guy so bad. I know 18 years plus, I haven't found one problem that I could solve. But let me tell you something. Between my 7th and 8th year of sobriety, in a 15-month period, this is what happened in my life. My mom got lung cancer. She fought it. She did the chemo. She lost all her hair. She did it for a year. She went to the doctors in November. They told her, you're fine. Go enjoy your holidays. We had a big family Christmas. She went to the doctors in March. She never came home. My dad, 15 months later, the rock of my life, never been to the doctor, died of prostate cancer. I found out that I was a diabetic. I got diabetes in 94 for Christmas. Hope you got something better. I got out of a sick relationship. Mom and Pop, my sponsors, moved to Indiana, so I lost 4 parents in 15 months. My brother was in a motorcycle accident, and my dog got cancer. And I'm here to tell you, through the love of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and having worked the steps and had a foundation to stand on, I walked on that foundation right through all that and didn't have to drink, use, or feel sorry for myself. And I'll tell you, that old man told me that in 1987. I'll tell you right now, if there's anybody in this room that could name me one problem that you could solve that will go away, that you'll never have to deal with again by using drugs or alcohol, my telephone number is 323-2-16-16-16. I will pick you up in a limousine with the alcohol or drugs of your choice. We will drive by this convention and go to Vegas. Call me. And one more thing about my dad before I wrap this up. My dad, my whole life, I'm trying to get a attaboy. I'm proud of you. Well, when he was sick, I got a chance to go with him to Italy. And I got for the first time to meet his family. And you know what my dad never told me he can love me? You know why he never told me? Because you know what? His dad never told him. I didn't come with the owner's manual. When I seen how tough he had it and how stiff his sister and brothers are, I started feeling sorry for him instead of hating him. If I had to blame my dad for the way my dad was, and I had to blame my grandfather because he raised him, then I got to blame my great-grandfather. So long story short, I'll be digging up bones and rattling bones, you know, all the way from here to Italy. See, but God gave me a second chance at life with my 4-year-old to break that chain. See, I get to break that chain. See, because let me tell you something, because after alcohol's done with us, it wants our kids. It wants the pain and the hurt and the madness that we put in. And that's how they kill the pain. It doesn't make a difference how much they went through it. It's never too late to go back and make it right. So, anyway, somebody gave me a job roofing. And then they told me that you have to become a contractor after 4 years. And I said, I'm not taking that test. I got dyslexia and learning disability. 1,800 questions they might ask me. They said, you know how to take that test. I said, how? I said, go get in the car. And don't forget to invite God into the day today. So I took that test and I passed it. First time. And I passed it in October. On Christmas Eve morning, my certificate comes from the state of California. And I went and got a frame for it. And it says, license qualifier, but Alcoholics Anonymous. License holder, Giuseppe DeLorenzo. I wrapped it up and I gave it to my dad. He says, here, Pop, this is for you. He says, what's this? I go, I passed that test. And you know what? I'm waiting for the tear to drop, because if this is the guy that's bailed me out, picked me up, I got suspended for building a bomb in seventh grade in electronics class. Put this guy through hell. You know, and he's looking at this plaque, and I know he's going to cry, because you know what? I'm into the results. And he's going to tell me he loves me. He's proud of me. And he's got a glimmer of water, but no tear. And he looks at this plaque. And he looks at my mom, he looks at this plastic, he looks at me, he turns to my mom, what do you think he says? What do you think he says? Give him $100. Oh, you guys don't speak Italian? Give him $100 means, son, I can't believe it, I'm so proud of you, you passed this test, I can't believe, I want to go kiss everybody in AA for giving me my son back. I'm jumping up and down inside, but I don't know how to express it. But what he did do, he put it under his arm, and I was in my room, and you know, God let me see it. He went out to his truck, and he literally put it in the seat like this, so when he went to work the next day, he could say, look what my boy did. So they could tell me, because he didn't know how. And the other thing about my dad, I started this thing called the Sober Fun Line, and it was a number you can call to find out where the dances are, so you didn't have to go to nightclubs, and I'm sponsoring people. So he sees all these people from Alcoholics Anonymous coming to my house. So he thinks I'm somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous. So this guy calls me, this Italian guy calls my dad who knows me and says, hey, I need to talk to Joey. I got this guy, he's drinking too much, maybe Joey could help him. So he didn't have my number, so he called my dad. So my dad gave him my number, he calls me, he goes, hey, Joey, he goes, your dad, he's so proud of you. I says, what are you talking about? Well, I was telling him about this guy drinking too much, maybe you can help him. And he says, hey, Carmelo, this guy, he's a drinker too much? Don't worry, my son Joey, he's the big boss of AA now. I'm not even going to tell you what that means in Italian, because I'm one of the girls today. Anyway, just to wrap this up. You know, I have two favorite movies of all time. One of them is The Godfather, and the other one's The Wizard of Oz. I started watching this Wizard of Oz movie like when I was about 6 months sober, and I watched it, and I seen some AA stuff in there. And then I watched it again, and I seen some more stuff. And I don't know about you, but it makes sense to me, and it's just my opinion. I think somebody read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and then made the movie The Wizard of Oz. And I can prove it. How does this movie start off? It's all in black and white. That's how my life was before God sent me to you. And the story is about, the movie's about this alcoholic named Dorothy. Now, they're having a big intervention for her in the fifth step room there in the living room, really, right? And saying, you know, and they're going to take away the most important thing in her life. What was that most important thing? Toto. What the hell was Toto? A short dog? I don't know. She ain't going to have any of this. So she takes her will and her life in her own hands and she says, I'm out of here, right? She starts heading down that dirt road. Who's the first person she meets on this journey? The professor. Who the hell is this untreated Al-Anon? Looking in his Al-Anon crystal ball saying, NEM is sick and is dying and it's all your fault, you damn alcoholic. He puts a guilt trip on her. He sends her right back where she comes from. It's in my book, taking a trip, not taking a trip. And they don't show this in the movie because of the kids, but you know she had to stop at the bar for a couple of short dogs or two. before she went and faced them. But this isn't the big book. The alcoholic is like a tornado ripping through the life of their loved ones. They're all hiding from her in the cellar having an Al-Anon meeting. Let me in, let me in. Go to meeting, you drunk. Call your sponsor. And she goes in the house and bumps her head and goes into a blackout. Now she's on what? She's on the bed with what, Alkies? The spins. Trying to put one foot down to stop the madness. Now when you wake up, she's in the wreckage of her past. She sees everybody out that window. Annie M., the farmhands. Oh, step 4 or 5, I can't take it. And who's the last person she sees? The Wicked Witch of the East. Who's that? Just her after a couple of short dogs or two. Now, when she lands, you know she lands in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because all of a sudden it's all in color, and they're all happy, joyous, and free. Being the good meeting that it is, they get her a sponsor, which is Glenda the Good Witch of the North. And what's the first thing Glenda asked her? Are you a good witch or a bad witch? I'm not a witch at all. Denial. Now, she wants to get home to her loved ones so she can make amends for the things that she's done, but she doesn't know how to do it. So what does Glenda say? Well, you got to follow the yellow brick road. Trudge a road of happy destiny, right? Dorothy says, how do I do that? She says, it's always best to start from the beginning. What's that? Step one, maybe? So she starts trudging the road to the Emerald City, and who's the first person she meets in this journey? Some alcoholic without a brain. I don't know about you, I always had a brain, just never knew how to use it till God sent me to you, and you sent me to trudge that road. So these two hook up, I guess where two or more are gathered, there will be in the midst. Who's the next person they meet? Some alcoholic didn't have a heart. I don't know about you, I thought I knew what love was, but real love ain't between the sheets. It's from here to here. So these three hook up, heading for the Emerald City, really the promises on page 83 in disguise, and I guess, you know, they're coming up on 30 days because they're going through that spooky forest. Lions and tigers and bears, oh my. But the real song was pot and pills and booze, oh no. They're all about ready to go out and get drunk, and what happens? They meet the newest newcomer of them all. Some alcoholic didn't have any courage. Hell, they had to stay sober for him. I don't know about you. I thought I knew what courage was. It's not running and gunning, but I found out what real courage is when you guys sent me to trudge through that book and find out the wreckage of my past. So these four hook up, heading for the Emerald City. Really, the promises in disguise, I guess, are on step 7 because they could see it. They're almost there. There's only one problem. What's between them and the Emerald City? Poppies. That's what they make heroin out of. What wakes them up? A little snow? I don't know. Got a monkey on your back, Scarecrow? You guys know that music? No, 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 no. I know the cops are out there. Finally, she gets to the promises, the Emerald City, and just for the hell of it, what does a witch write in the sky? Surrender, Dorothy. Now they meet the person that I love the most, and that's the wizard. And who is the wizard? Some scared guy hiding behind a curtain with the gangster hat and a trench coat, pretending to be something he's not. How dare you ask me for a brain? To find out that he wasn't the higher power, they had to find the higher power. So I don't know why she waits so long, but at the end of the meeting, her sponsor comes. At the end of the movie, her sponsor comes. And what does her sponsor say? Honey, you always had the power to go home. What do you mean? You had to take the journey. And she took that journey in those ruby red slippers. And inside those slippers were her feet where she took the steps. See, in 1939, when the first big book came out, it wasn't blue. It was ruby red. And inside this book are the steps we take for recovery. And by the way, how does Dorothy get home? Click your heels how many times? Step 1, step 2, step 3. God could and would if he were sought. And now she's home, and she's in that room, and they're loving her because she's restored to sanity, because she's worked all 12 steps and taken a journey. And she's loving them for the first time because she knows how to love now. And she got that from people like you in rooms like this. And all I could tell you is, the last thing she says is, there's no place like home, no place like home. And all I can tell you is, for me, there is no place like home. This is my home, and I'm going to stay one day at a time. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.